So tonight I want to talk about restlessness and worry. It's like it's a constant theme in this practice. And I've had talked to a few people about situations they're in their life lately, and it certainly in my life sometimes this stands quite large too. So restlessness and worry is one of the five kilesas. The kleshas, the obstacles to practice that are laid out in the Satipatthana Sutta. Other translations that come out instead of translating this one as restlessness, they might be translated as agitation, excitement, or distraction. And you think of the word restlessness, it literally means without rest. No, it's really wearing me down. And worry is sort of is a mind state that is sort of a subset of restlessness. It's a state of regret over past actions or things you didn't do, or anxiety, concern about the future. So it's a subset of restlessness. It's a special kind of restlessness, maybe. So you can be restless and not be worried. But if you're worried, you're guaranteed to be restless as well. That's how these things fit together. So what I want to do in this talk is look at three things. I want to look at how restlessness manifests. How do we know that we're restless? What is it that if we're being mindful and we'll see something go, we'll be able to go, oh, I know what that is. That's my old friend restlessness or worry or whatever. And then I want to look at the underlying causes of restlessness. And then I want to look at how we can skillfully work with restlessness in our practice. So it's sort of a three-part event here. So first of all, how do they manifest? The most obvious thing is that they manifest physically. If you're restless, one of the sure clues that you're restless is if you can't sit still. You know, you're sitting and oh no, I got to move my arm over because it doesn't feel right, or I got to move that foot, 2 centimeters to the left, or I got to wiggle, or I got to, it's like it's what my mother used to call having ants in your pants. You just you can't sit still. Physically, you can't sit still. If that's the case, that's often a clue that at the mental level you're dealing with restlessness in some one of the many forms. But it's like the physicalness is always going to be there. There's always going to be this, and it might be small. If you're you can actually be fairly concentrated and still be restless, as I'll talk about later. And so the physicalness might be subtle, but it's always going to be there. Okay. Then there's this whole concept of what Joseph Goldstein calls yogi mind, where you're sitting, you're practicing, maybe you're doing walking practice, and the thoughts you're having are totally out of proportion with reality. They're just like, you've taken some little thing and made this incredibly large, long story out of it, right? I'll give you an example because this will make it clearer, perhaps. This is some where I experienced this in what you'd call spades, perhaps. I was sitting at Spirit Rock, and I don't know if you know about Spirit Rock, but it's got these. The Dharma Hall has these huge glass windows. I mean, big, like they're like 10 feet tall and, 5 feet wide sort of thing. And right outside the back, there's this little back patio with places where you can walk. And I'd often, for my walking practice, I'd go back there and do my walking practice. And I'm just sort of walking back and forth. I'm just being a good yogi, right? And I hear this thump. It's like literally, whoo. And I look, and a bird has flown into one of one of these windows, unfortunately. And you know, it was sort of lying there and sort of fluttering a bit, and I'm like really concerned, of course. So I go over, and I pick the bird up and I hold it very carefully in my hands, and it's sort of like looking at me and it's sort of flickering a little bit, but it doesn't look great. So I'm thinking, well, what am I going to do? Well, I should take it to the office, which is I have to, you know, go through the foyer of the Dharma Hall and down a long path and get to the office, right? So I'm holding this bird in my hands and I'm thinking about all these things I got to do. And then someone sees this and they open the door for me to get into the foyer, and someone else opens another door so I can get out of the foyer. And then I get to, there's another big area there where you can do walking practice in the front. And there's some benches there. And I notice that the bird is sort of now sort of actually starting to stand up on my hands. It's not flying, but it's sort of standing there and sort of looking at me and sort of still quivering. So I very carefully go and sit on one of the benches and put this little bird down on the edge of the bench. And it's there, and I'm actually like petting it, you know, trying to sort of get it, make sure it's okay. And it's sort of looking at me, and it's not flying away or anything like that. It's not, doesn't seem capable of flying. And then the bell rings for the next sitting period, and I go, oh, I have to go sit, but I can't, what am I going to do? I got my bird. I got this bird here. And I didn't want to leave the bird there because there's lots of hawks always swooping down and getting things. So I pick up the bird again and I walk right over to the office, and I talk to the person who runs the office. Can you take care of this bird? And I told her this whole story, and then she said, oh yeah, put it here on the window ledge and I'll watch it. Okay, so I put it on the window ledge right outside where her office was and went in and sat. But of course I go to sit, and what's my mind full of? Oh, what am I going to do with the bird, you know? And I think, well, I know, I'll go to the kitchen, I'll get a box, and I'll put some grass in it, and I can let the bird live in my room. And then, no, it's really impractical. I can't do that. Oh, I know, Sally, who's one of the teachers, really is into animals, so I'll get Sally to take the bird and take care of the bird. So my whole 45-minute sitting period is full of all this thought about what am I going to do with this bird? No, and then, of course, the bell rings. I rush out. I rush over to the office. Bird's flown away. It's fine. It's gone. It's done. Story over. But what was interesting is my mind, my thoughts were like totally out of proportion to what was actually happening and how things should be. And I was just like, it was just a bird who ran into the window. And I made this incredible hour-long drama about it in my mind. This is what we do. This is restlessness. I mean, the whole time this is going on, of course, I'm sitting, on my cushion in the hall during the quote sitting period, and my mind is like full of this stuff, and I'm sort of fidgeting and I'm drifting around. Couldn't, it was like yogi mind in large script, shall we say. There are, however, this is like also can occur in some, restlessness can be very subtle sometimes. You may have experienced this. You're sitting and the mind is quite clear, and you're sort of staying with your object of meditation and being quite mindful. But the mind is sort of has these little flickers, like for a second or two, some thought will be there and then it'll be gone, and then a little bit later, there's another little flicker. Maybe it's the same thought. Maybe it's it. So it's like subtle little things. And this is also restlessness. And Joseph talks about this in his book Mindfulness. I want to read this. And this is, he's actually quoting a passage from the Sutta. And these two bhikkhus are having a conversation. So, when Anuruddha had perfected himself more and more in the jhanas and in those refined meditative perceptions, he one day went to see the venerable Sariputta. So Sariputta is the Buddha's main disciple, and people often go to him for advice. And so Anuruddha said, "Friend Sariputta, with the divine eye that is purified, transcending human sight, I can see the thousandfold world system. Firm is my energy, unremitting. My mindfulness is alert and unconfused. The body is tranquil and unperturbed. My mind is concentrated and one-pointed. And yet my mind is not freed from the cankers, not freed from clinging. Thereupon Sariputta replied, Friend Aruda, that you think thus of your divine eye, this is conceit in you. That you think thus of your firm energy, your alert mindfulness, your unperturbed body, and your concentrated mind, this is restlessness in you. That you think of your mind not being freed from cankers, this is worry in you. It would be good indeed if you would abandon these three states of mind, and paying no attention to them, direct your mind to the deathless element, Nibbana. So it's like he'd gone quite far along in the teaching and in the practice, but he still had all these little subtle versions of restlessness and worry going on. He was worried, am I ever going to be enlightened? You know, that's worry. It's a subtle quote. Supposed to be, we think of it as like some sort of, wow, it's like pure, so it's okay. But it's still worry. It's still a distraction. It's still stopping you from just being one, having a one-pointed mind. So it's just interesting, because often when I think about this, before I started studying to set up this talk, I always thought of restlessness as some sort of really gross, large body thing. And he's saying, no, right? In these little tiny, subtle things, even in very advanced practitioners, restlessness, like all the kilesas, by the way, doesn't go away ever until enlightenment. There's always some subtle level of it. And so we're talking here about the subtle level of it, but it's interesting. Anyhow, just I had fun preparing this talk because I was looking at, oh, look at this. This is another interesting thing. I never thought of it. So worry is a form of remorse or regret. It's anxiety. It's like, oh, what's going to happen? That's, you know, worry about the future. Or it's also remorse and regret, which is like, oh, I shouldn't have done that, you know. And we have to be careful, because especially with things from the past, it's sometimes quite skillful to look at things from the past and see where we have not acted wholesomely and learn from it. But then we have to just let it go. And often instead, we churn about it over and over. I know this is where some of our classic stories that we tell ourselves about things over and over and over again, a lot of them have this element of remorse or regret. Can be skillful, but in repeated doses over and over and over again, it's very wearing, actually. And the same with anxiety. Anxiety is more about the future, right? Like, oh, what's going to happen? Is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? You know, is so-and-so going to get elected in 2024? You know, I think that's one we all have anxiety about this one. Everybody got that one right away. But, you know, it's like, that's what we do. We sort of ferment these things in our mind. And they make us restless. It's a form of restlessness that is much more mental, but it's still very much there. Then we come to comparing mind. And I want to read, this is a quote from the Samyutta Nikaya. When anyone, this is the Buddha talking, when anyone on the basis of form, which is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, regards themselves thus, I am superior, or I am inferior, or I am equal, what does that do to, apart from not seeing things as they really are? These are all forms of restlessness. When we start comparing ourselves to other people, like, and we have to be careful on both sides here, right? It's like, oh, you know, I'm a serious meditating person, and those people who don't meditate, you know, it's something wrong with him. I said, clearly I'm much better, and it's very easy to end up there, right? Or, it's the opposite. It's like, I've seen this and I've experienced this in sitting with groups of people, and like you'll see someone who's just like, oh, this person just sits so still and I'm so restless and agitated. They must be way better than me. Actually, half the time they're probably sleeping, but then we didn't know. We don't know that, right? We compare, and in that process of comparing, we're creating a sense of self, and it's making us restless because things aren't the way they should be, right? And even equal to, is we have to watch that, because even with equal to, we're creating a sense of me, not me. There's me and that other person I'm equal to. It's we're losing the sense that everything is connected by creating two separate selves, me and that other person. It's also another place this arises is when we're comparing, in a sense, how we're doing to how we should be doing, or how we could be doing, where we think we get caught in those thought processes about, oh, my practice is okay, but I should be further along by now, or it was way better last year and now it's not so good, and blah 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 blah. We're always got that sense of comparing to how things should be, or what how they used to be, or whatever. Oh, don't need another person even. We can just beat ourselves up internally just by comparing ourselves to ourselves at a different time, or comparing ourselves to where we think we should be in the future, or where we should be today. These are all forms of restlessness. And they all have to do with us looking at our practice and trying to judge it in some way. And finally, and this one I like. It's kind of, once again, I'm familiar with it, maybe that's why I like this one, is boredom. When you're sitting and you think, oh God, this is boring, this is restlessness in a subtle way, because boredom is basically saying, let's have some action here. I want something to happen. That's just restlessness. Wanting something to happen is just a form of restlessness. It's just, so when you think, if you catch yourself in the thought of, oh God, this is really boring, go, oh, that's just restlessness manifesting itself. Right? So those are all the different ways that restlessness and worry can manifest, appear in our practice. Right? So let's go a little deeper and sort of look at what some of the causes of this restless habit or habits we have. And one of them is what Joseph calls an imbalance of concentration and energy. We're trying to concentrate, we're trying to be concentrated, but we're not putting enough energy into the practice. So the mind keeps flittering all over the place because it can't stay with the object of the meditation. Or we're putting so much energy into the practice, we're trying to force it in a sense, that we get overstimulated. And that energy then makes us physically restless. So that's one layer of that. Often this also arises, this imbalance of energy and concentration often arises because we tend, being Westerners, good Westerners that we are, to value thinking. Like, I can figure this out if I just think about it long enough. Here I am sitting, meditating, and what I'm really doing is trying to figure something out, trying to think my way through things, as opposed to just paying attention to what's actually arising. I'm thinking about what things are and how, because that's how we always, being Westerners, and how we're taught, We're taught that there's always a good answer for everything, right? There's always a clear explanation. And what we have to learn in this practice is that it's not the way this practice works. I mean, thinking is valuable. And if we couldn't think, we wouldn't be able to function very well. We wouldn't have got here to sit with me this evening if you hadn't thought about it. But it can turn into sort of like this addictive, restless energy where we're just always trying to figure everything out, as opposed to just paying attention to what's actually happening at a more precise level. The wording here is a bit, makes me nervous, but I came across that unwise attention to what is going on in the world. This is one I have to really watch, because I'm a big fan of reading the New York Times every day. And it's really easy to get caught up in all that's going on out there in the world, to the extent that you can't get your mind to ever be still. And so we have to keep, there has to be a balance. We can't ignore the world. That doesn't work either. You know, unless you want to become a monastic and go live in a monastery, but even there, they're dealing with the world. But we have to sort of balance that need to know what's going on and study and pay all. And but at a certain point, you know, when I read yet another news article about what happened to the people on October 7th and all the horrible things that happened, I'm going, I actually found myself going, why am I reading this? What do I need to read this for? I know it was really horrible. I know it was like unimaginably horrible. I don't need to read this stuff anymore. And so I'd skip over those articles on the New York Times now, even though they're still there all the time. I just, okay, I know enough about this, I don't need to know anymore. So that's hopefully wise attention to what's going on in the world. I know what's going on, I can see it, it's very clear to me, but I don't want to sort of get so involved in it that I become overwhelmed by it. Which is what happens when we get too deep into those rabbit holes. They overwhelm us with the what's going on out there. Then there's another one. This is more very direct everyday life. It's just too much talk. Too much attention to chatting and words in general. I think of this both in terms of, you know, physically, verbally talking, but also I think it's very clear that it has to do with stuff on the internet. You know, going on the internet and going to yet another website that has a slightly different set of perspectives on the news, and I want to make sure I get everything, and it just you just get buried in words, words and words and words and words and words, and this can be very distracting. You remember, one of the translations of the word restless is distraction. And too much, and once again, I'm not saying you shouldn't hang out with your friends and talk, or talk to your family or that sort of stuff, but you got to be careful how much. It's like, it's another thing you have to go, I was at a New Year's party on New Year's Eve. And around 10 o'clock, I sort of nodded to my wife, and I know my wife well. She nodded back, and we said, oh, we have to go now. It was down, we're not going to stay till midnight, because we'd been talking steadily for a couple hours. And I was like, oh, okay, that's enough. That's enough. I don't need to talk anymore. And off we went. But it's like we have to sort of see that that's okay. And it's not like rude to sort of walk out in the middle of some big long conversation people are having. Say, no, time for me to go. And we just, put on our shoes and socks and coats and off we went. Anyhow, you see what I'm saying though? It's like we have to sort of ration that sort of stuff. Otherwise, it becomes, once again, too much of something. And then dwelling on past actions. This is like It's so frequent, speaking personally at least, it's so frequent that we get caught up in stories about things that happened back then, whether it's yesterday or 20 years ago. And we have these sort of long stories that we tell ourselves where, it's, they're always mind dramas. They're always, one teacher said, used to say, these are all movies starring me. But they're mind movies. They're always me at the center, but sometimes I'm the villain and sometimes I'm the hero and sometimes I'm just the calm observer in the corner. But I'm always the center of it in some way. And the thing about the past is it's gone. It's done. Absolutely nothing we can do about it. There's a saying in one of the third Zen patriarch, I haven't got the exact quote here, but something like a wise man who is content with the past. Just content. It's what it was. It's done. I can't change it. Wise man is someone who's another layer of the way of saying that is being wise is understanding that you can't have a different past. That you can't have a different past, which is often what these stories are about. We tell us these stories and we sort of try and see if we can tweak the version of them to make them come out, quote, better. I want to have a better past. Well, you can't. It's done. And so we have to, this is where a lot of restlessness and agitation comes from, in that we, these stories, first of all, often have a lot of emotional content, and they rattle us on an emotional level. And in the end, they are useless. Other than, as I said, it's good to look things in the past a little bit and understand, oh, yeah, that wasn't very skillful. I should be aware of that and try not to do it again. That's skillful looking at things in the past. But that's all. Once you've done that, let it go. Nothing you can do about it anyway. Hard. This is hard. He says this casually, having, been caught in this world more times than I care to count. Anyhow, then the question becomes, okay, so we've looked at how these things manifest and what their causes are. So now, how do we work with this stuff? What's the skillful way we can actually work with restlessness and worry? Number one, at the top of the list, what a surprise, mindfulness. It's actually seeing clearly that restlessness and worry is what's arisen now in the stream of what's arising. This is, we have to be able to go, ah, it's my old friend restlessness. We can't beat ourselves up about it. That's not very important. But we have to be able to see it for what it is. Just see it and name it. I want to read something from, this is a book called Satipatthana by Anna Lyall. So a monk. This is actually a PhD thesis on the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the Buddhist instructions in mindfulness. But he has something interesting to say here. And he's saying this is like how we can, what form our mindfulness might take, because mindfulness is a big term, right? In the opposite case, when restlessness and worry have arisen, factors leading to an increase of mental calmness and stability should be developed. Here, mindfulness of breathing stands out as a particularly effective method of calming the thinking activity of the mind. In addition, any of the other subjects of calmness meditation are appropriate in this situation, together with improving the general degree of mental calmness and composure during one's activities. So he's saying part of this is like, oh, there's restlessness has arisen. It might be skillful, and this is an interesting thing. And you have to be careful you don't turn this into just pushing something away. No, don't want to go there. But like, oh, restlessness has arisen. So I see it for what it is and go, let's do some a really simple form of practice. Let's back off the wide open, take everything in world of mindfulness, and instead just pay attention to the breath. See if I can just see each breath arising and falling. Simple, focused practice. And it might not be breath. I know some people who would say, no, focus on hearing instead. Hearing is another thing that's like the breath that's always there. It's just find some simple, focused form and shift your practice to that and see if that releases the desire to get caught up in the restless action. Which is really, there's always desire and there's restlessness because you want to do something about it, right? So it's just, but then he also points, I think, right at the end of that quote, he said, also look at your actions in the world, in a broader sense. Yeah, so my mind's restless a lot as I'm sitting. Maybe I'm being overly stimulated out there in the world. Maybe I'm reading too much of the New York Times every day, or whatever it is, however you stimulate yourself. Maybe I shouldn't be watching all those Star Trek reruns, because or whatever it is, we all have ways of stimulating ourselves, and we have to go, maybe I need to do a little less of that. I need a little less stimulation than I'm getting in my daily life. And look at that and see if cutting down that stimulating energy, stimulating activities helps calm the mind in the broader sense of it'll be less restless. And then here's another interesting thing from Analayo. He says, seeing, we need to have our practice be very precise. Like consciously, it's often, we're sitting and we're sort of half mindful. It's sort of we're mindful, but we're sort of noodling along at the same time, and there's some stuff going on in the background. And oh yeah, there's another breath, and blah 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 blah. Oh, there is another breath. We're not precise. This is where there's a practice called aiming and sustaining, which are the first two steps in concentration, where can you see the very beginning of a breath? Can you see all parts of the breath as it's occurring? I mean, if you start really paying precise attention to just a breath, even, it's like, wow, look at all the things that happen just as I inhale or as I exhale. There's a norm. If you start paying at the precise level of detail of all the different pieces, this that calms and focuses the mind, which is takes us away out of this restless energy. Also, and this is I found this one really interesting. Open your eyes. There you are sitting, and you're feeling really restless. Open your eyes. And look, because often the act of looking sort of focuses the mind in a sense, and that restless story energy running in the background goes away because now there's something to focus on. It helps you connect to the moment, like what's going on. And oh, I know I because visual energy about. This is an interesting thing I found out a long time ago. About 50% of the thoughts that arise in our mind come from what we see. Half. So sometimes it's like, oh, just open your eyes and take in something that sort of is totally neutral. Totally neutral. You're not like you're looking for something, you're just looking. You're just seeing what's there. And sometimes that'll shift the energy. Interesting thing about this, when I came across this in my study preparing for the talk, this is exactly the same antidote that is often suggested for sleepiness. The opposite of restlessness. If you're sitting and you're sort of doing, the chicken nod form of meditation, right? It's often just open your eyes. Because once again, that stimulating energy will wake you up enough that often the sleepiness will go away. It's fascinating to me that exactly the same antidote is works for both edges of that unpleasant experience. Sometimes in a broader sense, if restlessness is an ongoing thing, or even in a particular practice session, it might be wise if you're being caught in restlessness to stop and what Joseph calls wise reflection. Like go, why am I here? What am I doing here? Why am I sitting here practicing? What was my original intention for this particular sitting period, or in the broader sense of why am I practicing even? Because that sometimes you'll go, oh, it sort of wakes you up to the broader picture and takes away that restless energy. So it's thinking, but in a very precise way about the original intention you had to be there in the first place. So it's not thinking in the broad context of, well, I'll think about anything. It's like a very precise, focused, aimed form of thinking. Particularly paying attention to your intentions for practice. Sometimes that breaks through the restlessness just there. Ah, this one. Understanding the difference between guilt, which is an unwholesome mind state, it's actually sort of a very large ego thing. Oh, I'm such a bad person, right? That's guilt. And remorse, which is acknowledging and learning from former unskillful actions or speech, which is wholesome. Remorse can, remorse when you don't indulge in it, don't hang out there a long time, is very skillful. But guilt is never skillful because guilt has this huge sense of self embedded in it. Like, I'm the guilty person. I'm the person who did this bad thing. I'm so, it turns into beating yourself up every time. So guilt is not skillful. Remorse, which is related to guilt, but it's like looking directly at what happened and then going, yeah, now I don't need to do that. I shouldn't do that again, and then letting it go. Whereas guilt is something we often, if we're not careful, start to wallow in. So when you see that sort of energy, that sort of reflective look at the past energy, is this remorse? Is this genuine remorse? Yeah, okay, I can be okay with that and see what I can learn, and so I won't do that again and cause more suffering in the world or for myself, versus guilt, which is just like beating yourself up. Seeing the difference between those two can be quite skillful. Ah, then here's, I love this one. Have a sense of humor about your practice. It's really so essential. It's like there you are, and you're caught in another storm of restlessness and agitation. You're shifting around in your chair and your mind's spinning around. You're mindful enough to see. Remember, number one was mindfulness, right? You're mindful enough to see that's what happened. And then you can go one of two ways. You can start beating yourself up, oh, what's wrong with me, blah, 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 blah. Or you can go, ah, oh, that one again. Isn't that hilarious? That here I am caught in this old place yet again. And just sort of laugh at yourself. Have a sense of humor about your practice, because We have no control over what's arising in the mind. So sometimes this is like, oh, there I am, just reacting again. I sometimes will say something to my mind along the lines, oh, there's my old friend restlessness again. Now it's not a big deal. And I actually laugh at myself. Like, oh God, Barry, how could you be here yet again? Isn't it hilarious that you keep coming back to this old story, what happened with you 30 years ago with this guy, blah, 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 which does happen sometimes. I have a few stories like that from way back when in my businessman days where drama occurred. Anyhow, that's another whole story. Finally, and this is the last one of the list of how to skillfully work with these, is to know that a still mind and awareness of something simple is always available. Always right there. It's like we have to remember that that quality of awareness and stillness is always available. We may not think it is. Sometimes something will beat ourselves up about it, but it's always there. It's like the nature of being a human being is that the energy of being just aware and calm is available. The Buddha said we're all little Buddhas in process. He wouldn't have said that if this wasn't true. Awareness is always available. Something to sort of, you have to sort of take that in and let it sink in. So that's pretty much all I have to say about restlessness and worry. Now, just quickly, reviewing, we have to, first of all, just notice it. We have to, the key to this whole thing, like many of things in this practice world, is being mindful that that's actually what's happened. Actually see it for what it is and name it. Ah, restlessness. Ah, worry. Ah, agitation. Ah, I'm distracted. Joseph, in one of his books, says sometimes when you're sitting and it's like this and there's all this stuff going on, the only thing you can do is note chaos. And this is chaos. But the fact that you're aware that there's chaos is actually quite skillful. It's like, oh, yes, chaos. Yep. My old friend chaos is here again. But it's like to see and be able to name it for what it is means that at some level you're still aware of what's happening in the moment. Even if it's like just this mad jumble of stuff, it's chaotic. But you're aware of the chaos. And like everything, awareness of something allows you to be mindful of it, even if it's totally chaotic. It's now, I've turned what was a quote problem or an obstruction to my practice into just something that I'm mindful of now. This is what's arisen right now. I'm caught in one of these storms of whatever, restlessness or worry or anger or regret or whatever. But if I can be mindful of it and aware of it and feel it, drop into my body and feel it, now it's just that's what's arisen. Now I'm mindful of it. It's just now that's my object of meditation right now. This wild, restless energy just becomes my object of meditation. And now it's not a problem anymore. It's just what's there. And now, what's the definition of mindfulness? Is to be attention to pay attention to what's there. Well, that's what's there right now. And often, it's what's really interesting is being aware of it and letting yourself just pay attention to it makes it go away. It dissipates it quite strongly, quite quickly. It's the power of mindfulness, is that it like takes anything and it just sort of smooths it and calms it. because we're actually looking straight at it. We're not trying to avoid it. We're not clinging to it. We're not pushing it away. We're just being aware that's what's there. That's the key to all of these things, I think. Mindfulness is the thing, you know. But as I said, we have to be aware that this is what is going on first. You have to see it for what it is. For me, I found the most obvious clue often is the physicalness of these energies. The fact that I'm restless will always manifest in my body as some sort of shifting and wiggling and not being comfortable and, you know, oh, that thing in my knee, oh no, my knee will be sore for the rest of the sit now, blah, blah, blah. You know, all those things that we get caught in, right? And it's just nonsense. And it's like being aware of it is like, oh, okay. Now I can just be aware that that's what's going on. Now it's not a problem anymore. It's only a problem when I don't see it. It may be very unpleasant. We have to acknowledge that as well, which will make us want to push it away. But that never, we've hopefully learned by now that trying to push something away just gives it more energy usually. So just calmly go, oh, that one again. That's okay. That's okay. That's the key to this whole thing. I want to finish, as I often do, with a little bit of poetry, of course. This is, see, I was wondering what poem to read tonight, and it took me a while to figure this one out, but this seems like an appropriate piece of poetry. It's called Why I Wake Early, Mary Oliver. This is the book, Why I Wake Early, by Mary Oliver. There's a particular poem called Breakage. I go down to the edge of the sea, where everything shines in the morning light. The cusp of the whelk, the broken cupboard of the clam, the opened blue mussels, moon snails, pale pink and barnacle scarred, and nothing at all whole or shut, but tattered, split, dropped by the gulls onto the gray rocks, and all the moisture gone. It's like a schoolhouse of little words. Thousands of words. First, you figure out what each one means by itself, the jingle, the periwinkle, the scallop full of moonlight. Then you begin slowly to read the whole story. That's sort of the antidote to restlessness in a way, is reading the whole story. It seems that way to me. Anyway.